All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world, and happy Friday, everybody. Today is July 10th, 2026. You know, yesterday we were talking about how European automakers are just dying, about how several things, the cost of doing business in Europe, U.S. tariffs were contributing, but really it was China is why the European automakers are dying. And we've got two stories this morning right along those lines. First one up, China Vanke. Their first half losses are expected to widen from to a range of 12 to 15 billion yuan. And the upper band of that 15 billion yuan is about $2.2 billion U.S. that they're expected to lose in the first 6 months of the year. That is higher than their losses in the same period a year ago that were 11.9. Best case scenario, they're still going to be worse than that. They're saying it could be as bad as 15 billion yuan. So really bad numbers from Vanke here. They're getting worse. Now, Vanke is saying this is due to a decline in settlements. They are selling fewer apartments. They're also taking asset impairments. They're finally starting to mark down the value of their assets. They're not doing it fast enough. They've been doing this, what are they, like 5 years into this crisis now? What's your hurry, fellas? Why don't you stop and stay a while at these valuations? And home prices are still falling. And that's the thing, 5 years into this crisis, how long has it been since my first video about Evergrande way back in the distant past, 2021? And still those home prices are falling and they're still accelerating to the downside as they fall. The property crisis in China, I mean, it doesn't get that much coverage anymore in the United States. It is every bit as severe as it was all the way back in 2021. The Chinese have been, man, they have just made a science out of extend and pretend, something we're doing too with commercial real estate here in the States. And, you know, I keep saying there's something else going on to explain this oil market. And I've been saying how I don't trust pricing in the oil markets, how it's been just defying logic. How could so much supply get disrupted without prices going vertical unless there's some demand destruction happening? And I think China is partly to explain that. Obviously, the Chinese are importing less oil. We can see that. But I think they're actually using a lot less oil also, not just importing less and burning down their reserves. And, you know, back on those European automakers, we've got another one today. BMW and Volkswagen are on top of the Porsche and Mercedes that we talked about earlier this week. The sales at those two companies, BMW and Volkswagen in China, have declined 30 and 37% respectively. Holy shit. A 37% decline in Volkswagen sales in China. That's not just a rough patch. That is getting wiped out. The Chinese are just absolutely elbowing the Europeans out of their market because the Chinese produced way too many electric vehicles at a loss. The government said, yo, companies, knock that off. You're causing deflation. We can't afford deflation because we have this big property crisis and all the debt surrounding those buildings. We can't let the value of that debt go up. It would kill us. And so what did they do? They just started dumping those Chinese mass-produced EVs at a loss into any market that would take them. And the Europeans are just getting squeezed out here. I don't think they have a lot of options. Now, the other big story going on this morning, the Japanese yen strengthened overnight. Not a heck of a lot, but it did strengthen after their finance minister went on TV and said that the government would be pushing pension funds to invest domestically into Japanese financial assets. And right now, the pension funds in Japan are doing what everybody else is doing. They're taking their yen and they're converting it to dollars and they're buying U.S. assets and assets in other countries, the part of the yen carry trade. So somehow the Japanese government is going to incentivize or otherwise lean on the pension funds to start buying more Japanese financial assets, Japanese government bonds, Japanese corporate bonds. Look. This is a way that they're going to try to prop up their failing yen, because if they're buying these Japanese financial assets, then they're not converting their money to dollars. They would have to convert their dollars back into yen, strengthening the yen in order to buy those assets. So the Japanese government is trying to use people's pension money to prop up their failing currency. And I'm just pounding the table. I've been seeing this happen all over the freaking world. This man, it bugs me when I see pensions using, we're using it for exit liquidity here in the States. Oh, you got private equity, private credit, commercial real estate assets. You don't know what to do with. Just dump that shit in a pension. Oh, you're trying to push climate change, or you don't like the Second Amendment, so you're trying to punish gun manufacturers. Oh, we'll make all the pension funds sell those assets. Oh, hey, conservatives, you're up there too. Oh, your woke agenda pushback causing state pension funds to dump companies whose politics you don't like. The Europeans are doing the same thing. We want to spur domestic manufacturing resurgence, so we're going to order our pension funds to invest domestically. No, that is not your effing money. It is not yours to do with in order to suit your freaking political agenda. That money belongs to the retirees who have earned it and are trusting you to manage it to the maximum benefit for them. Those pensioners, regardless of their personal preferences, don't care about your gun agenda, about your climate agenda, about saving your dying currency, or about propping up your industrial base that has just attrited away because of your stupid energy policy. It's not your money to do that with. And it's just one of the, I'm obviously getting a little verklempt here. So now the Japanese are doing that too. The Europeans do it. The Americans do it. They're doing it. And look, the yen did strengthen overnight a little bit. It's already given up half of those gains because Japan is basically trapped in late stage modern monetary theory. Their currency is in a death spiral. And the only way they can fix it would fail their banks. So good luck with that. Apparently printing money endlessly for decades actually has consequences. Who knew, besides the Austrians? We also got some fun news this morning. Ben Bernanke, the former Federal Reserve Chair, is joining this, not the board of directors, the Long-Term Benefit Trust at Anthropic. Now, the Long-Term Benefit Trust, because Anthropic is a public benefit corporation, gag me with that nonsense, but I digress. This, what are they called again? The Long-Term Benefit Trust actually appoints the board of directors. So Ben Bernanke is assuming a very powerful position at Anthropic here. And hey, that's great. You know, the man who didn't see the housing bubble coming and then led the charge of government bailouts of the housing bubble is going to be like essentially running things at Anthropic. Hey, maybe there's a signal there. I don't know. You guys do what you want with that one. What else we got going on? Okay, Delta Airlines this morning, not quite as funny. Earnings and revenue beat from Delta Airlines, higher ticket prices, more expensive jet fuel. Pretty self-explanatory with that one. Delta not suffering like the budget airlines are because Delta serves a slightly higher class clientele, a little bit more of the upper K with Delta, and so they're not feeling the pinch like your budget airlines are. We've got SK Hynix U.S. American Depository Receipts begin trading today. That is another stock dump onto AI investors from SK Hynix. They'll begin trading under the ticker SKHY. We've got some crazy charts to that effect showing the massive transfer of money from hyperscalers to the chip makers. I mean, this cash bleed is incredible. And even that is not enough. We've got another chart showing how big tech's debt load has more than doubled during this bubble. They have added $350 billion of debt, just the hyperscalers, those big five, on top of all the free cash flow that they have incinerated. Again, if only there were signs, and Ben Bernanke's going to fix all that. And last but not least, we got to end with, we got a new player in the data center space, CCH Holdings in Malaysia. We're going to have some fun with that one. Stick around to the end of the show for that one. And last but not least, before we get too far, I want to mention I will be on the Macro Edge radio show tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern time. We're going to be talking all about data centers, AI bubbles in Asia. So I will post, I'll show you guys the link to that towards the end of the show. But first, we must shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back and have your coffee with the melon heads on Monday, because we do this every business day. And right now, the S&P 500 is pretty much unchanged here, 2 points higher, 0.03% to the upside. The Dow is up by 166 points, about a third of a percent higher this morning for the Dow. And the NASDAQ is down by 112 points or 0.39% to the downside. Got a little bit of rotation out of tech and into your safer names this morning. The U.S. dollar is essentially unchanged, off by 3 basis points, 100.91. We'll show that USD JPY chart in just a little bit, maybe contributing to those few basis points of loss there. Looking over at the bond market, got a little bit of movement here and very little. The 30-year yield is up by one basis point, 5.063%. The 10-year yield is at 4.545, up by a half a percent, but well, a couple points below the highs we saw this week. We got pretty close to 4.6 earlier this week. The 2-year yield is at 4.185. That's higher by 2 points and change. And the 1 month is higher by three basis points, 3.684% for the 1 month treasury bill. Looking over at Bitcoin, they are having a good morning in Bitcoin, $64,186. That's higher by $1,000. Bitcoin caught a bid yesterday. I didn't hear any specific crypto news, but a good day for Bitcoin. Again, I still think we have a couple of months of winter ahead of us, though. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are a little bit lower this morning. Spot gold, $4,099. That's off by $24, or 0.6% lower. Spot silver is at $59.60, lower by 35 cents, or about 0.6%. Copper is pretty much unchanged here. Platinum lower by 0.4%. Palladium is higher by 1.4%. Oh, and by the way, I almost forgot to say it. I like the shiny. Sorry, guys. I missed that one. We're a little late with liking the shiny this morning. And oil sitting at $72.14. That's higher by about a nickel for August WTI crude oil. Let's talk a little bit about oil futures here. There's the chart. Again, like, you know, we had, yeah, the war's back on. Everybody was like, you know, they went from very fine people and great negotiators, the Iranian team, to they were scum and you can't trust them. So oil went up a couple of bucks. It went as high as like $76. Now we're back at 72. After all the bombs and missiles that flew this week, what did we get? We got $4 a barrel higher in oil on the complete closure of the strait, minus a few ships that are getting through with their transponders turned off. We also had some good information from Javier Blas here. He's the chief commodities guy over at Bloomberg. He's saying global oil stocks posted an increase in June entirely due to rising volumes of oil on water. All right, so that's oil sitting in tankers, probably in the Persian Gulf. That's according to the IEA estimates. It's the first monthly increase since the war, and it comes after stocks fell by 360 million barrels from March through May. All right, so an increase in global stocks because of more oil on the water. That was, you know, the MOU was signed on June 17th. You had a whole bunch of tankers real quick got loaded up, and they started sailing during that time. So we actually saw an increase in global stocks. I don't think that's going to last because now the strait is closed again. And it's also worth pointing out that globally, oil inventories dropped by 360 million barrels from March through May. That is the total loss since this war began, 360 million barrels, or about 4 million barrels a day of burn down in reserves. Now, keep in mind, the Strait of Hormuz typically saw about 20 million barrels per day of traffic before the war began. So the world has somehow made up for 16 million barrels of that, either through shipping it around the strait, the few tankers that have managed to get through, increases in U.S. production, the dumping of reserves, the SPR and the Chinese in particular, but also demand destruction. And so the market's only operating at about a 4 million barrel per day deficit. And we still have, what are we looking at here? Almost 8 billion barrels in global inventory. So I guess that's why the oil market isn't exploding higher here, because we could keep this up. I mean, I don't know where these talking points about the world runs out of oil in 3 days came from. There's almost 8 billion barrels of this stuff sitting in tanks and caverns all over the world. Meanwhile, China Ivanka, this is the big one this morning. China Ivanka says first half loss may widen to $2.2 billion. China Ivanka, which was formerly the biggest real estate developer in China, said that its first half loss could reach $2.2 billion due to low gross margins on property development projects and asset impairment charges. Yeah, here we are, 5 years later, they're finally starting to mark down those assets. The troubled developer reported a preliminary net loss between 12 billion yuan, or about $1.8 billion, and 15 billion yuan, which is $2.2 billion, for the 6 months ended in June, according to a filing with the Shenzhen Stock Exchange on Friday. That compares with a net loss of 11.9 billion yuan in the same period last year. So the losses are getting bigger than they were a year ago. The The company attributed the results to a sharp fall in settlements for its property developments, selling fewer apartments, while gross margins remained low. It also booked new asset impairment provisions to reflect changes in the industry, market, and operating environment. In other words, their buildings are not worth what they've been telling us for years. Color me shocked. The company operating indicators have yet to show meaningful improvement, while debt and liquidity remain under pressure, Ibaka said in the filing. The developer added it'll focus on reducing risks and restoring growth by revitalizing existing assets, improving cash generation, and focusing on key cities and core businesses while exiting non-core investments. In the first half of the year, Ivanka delivered about 23,000 homes on schedule, while the holders of all 10 of its publicly traded bonds agreed to extend their maturities, the filing showed. That is an important data point there. The holders of all 10 of their publicly traded bonds agreed to extend the maturities. These guys know that if they didn't agree to extend the maturities, that Ivanka was just going to default and they would get nothing back. So they're basically holding their bondholders hostage here, saying you will be forced to book the losses if you don't let us pay you later instead of not paying you now. And so Ivanka was able to buy themselves a reprieve. China's property downturn has dragged on for almost 5 years, leaving once high-flying developers such as Ivanka saddled with debt and undermining Beijing's efforts to revive consumer spending and reduce the economy's reliance on exports. Home prices fell at a faster pace in May, dashing hopes that early signs of stabilization at the start of the year would lead to a broader recovery. All right, so the property crisis is getting worse, and you better believe that this is a direct input into this story. BMW and Volkswagen sales decline on worsening slump in China. Every day this week, we have had some article about a problem with a European automaker. BMW and Volkswagen's vehicle sales fell in the second quarter due to a worsening decline in China, where mounting competition from domestic rivals and a property crisis is stifling demand. Both manufacturers on Friday reported waning global sales in the period, dragged down by stark declines in China, where local manufacturers led by BYD dominate on electric cars. Sales of the BMW and Mini brands in the Asian country slumped 30%, while Volkswagen's deliveries there cratered by 37%. That is a massive decline in sales. We saw something similar from Mercedes. They were in the mid-20s. Porsche was 30%. Volkswagen, 37% decline in China sales. And that's the biggest car market in the world. You just don't bounce back from that. The numbers cap a difficult week for Germany's auto industry. Both Porsche and Mercedes already reported falling deliveries, citing China, where a protracted real estate crisis is eroding the spending power of affluent buyers. They're also grappling with high energy and labor costs in Europe and President Trump's import tariffs in the lucrative U.S. market. All right, guys, problems for European automakers continues here. By the way, there is a lot of back and forth between the Volkswagen labor board or the union guys and the company. The company's pushing for 100,000 layoffs and the closure of a bunch of plants. The union's saying, no, you can't do that. We're probably going to hear a lot more about this. Meanwhile, Japan is using someone's grandma's pension money in order to prop up their failing yen. Yen rises as Japan lures pension funds into domestic assets. I don't know if they're luring or if they're forcing them into it. The yen bounced on Friday on news that Japan plans to encourage pension funds to increase their holdings of domestic financial assets, a move analysts said could offer more support to the battered currency than intervention. Japanese Finance Minister Satsuki Kachiyama said the government was pursuing measures that would include the Government Pension Investment Fund, or GPIF, one of the largest pension funds in the world, to make substantially greater investments in Japanese financial assets. The yen jumped from the weaker side of 162 per dollar to an intraday peak of 161.2. It was last about 161.7. The rally was broad-based, with the euro and the British pound down 0.3% against the yen. Before Friday's news, the yen had been languishing near 40-year lows, keeping traders on guard for potential intervention by Japanese authorities. And you can see in the chart here, these are daily candles on USD, JPY. Again, this chart moving lower shows the yen strengthening. And here is what we got for that. There we go. Japanese pension money being poured into Japanese financial assets to prop up the failing yen. And we got a lousy 1 yen to the dollar decrease in the USD JPY chart. It initially dropped by 2, and already it has given up half of those gains. You see the big wick on that candle here. And this is after the rate check that was done earlier last week where they tried to prop up the yen. And again, the market just recovered from that right away. The Japanese efforts to prop up the yen are having less and less of an effect. They intervened back in May. They intervened again after that. And here you notice these red candles are getting smaller with each intervention or each little policy nudge. And yet the yen overall, it just wants to keep weakening. This is late stage modern monetary theory, guys. The Japanese yen is, you tell me, not looking so good here, is it? By the way, this is the yen carry trade panic of the August 2024, the big stock market crash that happened then. We're already above those levels. And former Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke joins the Anthropic Oversight Trust. All right, we're not going to go too deep into this one. Let's bring up Ben there. There's Ben Bernanke. All right, that was the chairman of the Federal Reserve, a Jay Powell and a Warsh and a Yellen ago. He was basically the guy who didn't see the housing bubble coming. And then after the housing bubble popped, he was responsible for all the bailouts, or at least the bailouts at the Fed and all the expansion of the balance sheet, something that they still have not been able to unwind. And now he's going to help out with the AI bubble. Oh, good. Oh, good. The guy who didn't see the bubble coming and then led the government bailout is going to work for Anthropic. Maybe there's a signal there. Maybe AI is a bubble and they're already working on the bailout. And that's why Ben Bernanke's getting a job at Anthropic. Hey, I just throw him out there. You guys do what you want with him. Meanwhile, Delta beats estimates as travel demand withstands fuel costs. It was a pretty good quarter for Delta, despite a big jump in jet fuel prices. Delta Airlines reaffirmed its full-year profit and guidance and said strong demand for premium corporate and international travel helped offset the highest quarterly fuel expense in its history. The Atlanta-based airline earned an adjusted $1.56 a share in the second quarter, it said on Friday, topping estimates of $1.51. Revenue rose 14% from a year earlier, with capacity increasing just 1%. That means much higher ticket prices. The carrier also resuscitated their 2026 adjusted earnings forecast of $6.50 to $7.50 a share that it had issued back in January, but which omitted from its report back in April, highlighting the lingering uncertainty of the world's largest aviation market. All the airlines pulled their guidance back in April because the jet fuel prices went up so much they couldn't guarantee those profits. Delta's adjusted fuel expense of $4.4 billion was up 77% from the year-ago period. If you're wondering why it's so expensive to fly, guys, there you go. 77% increase in fuel, even though only a 1% increase in capacity. Yikes. Delta stock, though, actually, let's refresh this, get an accurate mark. It is down, come on, Yahoo, down 1.7%, $87.46 off by $1.51. Also, today, SK Hynix raises $26.5 billion in biggest foreign debut in U.S. history. These are ADRs, or American Depository Receipts, which are basically an IOU, a share of a foreign company that trades on the U.S. stock exchanges. This is a way that SK Hynix can sell high, sell into the bubble hysteria here in the States, and get AI bro investors to finance them cashing in on this bubble. SK Hynix will be trading under SKHY. It looks like it has not yet begun trending. Begun trading here. Yeah, it's still saying pending IPO price. Again, this isn't necessarily an IPO. This company's been public in Korea for years, but this is the first time they've been sold on an American exchange. So I guess they're calling it an IPO because of that. But let's talk about why SK Hynix is dumping these shares onto the U.S. stock exchange. Maybe it has something to do with a chart like this. This one from Barchart on Twitter. Micron will likely make more money in 2026 than the past 35 years combined. Look at that. There's a nice sustainable pattern right there. Look at the, what is this? Their net income and then their estimates of what net income is going to be in 2027. More than the last 35 years combined. Yeah, that guys, that's not a sustainable chart, obviously. It's a bubble. That's what that is. You're looking at a bubble. Now, let's talk about where that money is coming from. We got this one from Zero Hedge, which is a chart taken from a Bank of America report. A generational transfer in free cash flow is taking place, according to BOFA. This chart in light blue is showing the free cash flow for the hyperscalers, and that is Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft, and Oracle. Their free cash flow combined. And you'll notice their free cash flow has gone from about $250 billion a year at the start of this bubble to negative. It looks like about negative $30 billion a year. That's right. All these companies are now losing money. They're not reporting losses. Oh, their earnings per share continues to grow, but earnings per share doesn't include their CapEx that they're spending on their data centers, and they're spending more than they're earning, which means free cash flow is now officially negative. Where is all that money going? Well, there you go. There's the semiconductor companies. And the dark blue line, that is the free cash flow for the semis. That's NVIDIA, Micron, Broadcom, and Applied Materials combined. All that money leaving the hyperscalers directly to the semis. Again, the semis, they're the only ones making any money in this bubble. Everybody else is losing money hand over fist. And you'll also notice that the increase in the dark blue line is actually bigger than the decrease in free cash flow. How is that possible? That's possible because of debt. Big tech doubles debt load to $350 billion in AI spending spree. Not only have they eviscerated their once glorious free cash flow, but they are going into debt on top of that to the tune of hundreds of billions and growing by the day. This one just today in Bloomberg, the largest builders of artificial intelligence data centers have doubled their debt load in the last 5 years, turning to borrowing to finance an unprecedented spending spree they claim is needed to transform the economy. Yeah, transform the economy from good to awful, maybe. Alphabet, Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, and Oracle, the five biggest spenders on new data centers in the U.S., same companies from that chart we just showed, collectively added some $350 billion to their debt obligations in just the last 5 years, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. They're betting heavily that cutting-edge AI services will mean a flood of new revenue down the line. Investors have enthusiastically backed the companies, snapping up new bonds issued in a variety of currencies. But buyers gave an unusually chilly reception this week to a $25 billion issuance from Amazon, people familiar with the matter told Bloomberg, a sign that there's a limit to the amount of money available to back investment from tech giants. So they've added $350 billion in debt. We talked earlier this week about the chilly response to the Amazon bond offering, that it was only like 1.6 times oversubscribed as opposed to typically 4 to 10 times. And now let's also keep in mind that BlackRock article we talked about yesterday, where they were saying private credit is going to be expected to finance the data center build out now. Private credit, the one investing class that investors can't pull their money out of fast enough, somehow they're going to come up with the hundreds of billions of dollars that the bond market is no longer willing to provide in order to keep this spending spree going. Yeah, freaking right, guys. This bubble's days are numbered. And if only there were signs. I love this one. This one in The Edge, Malaysia. And by the way, Malaysia, put a pin in that. That's important. From chicken hot pot to data center, Penang restaurant chain owner bags 204 million RM. I don't know what that currency is. Tech services deal. It's worth about $50 million. Chicken hot pot to data center. Yep, I kid you not. This may come as one of the most unexpected corporate twists of the year. A Penang-based chicken hot pot restaurant operator has secured a $50 million deal to provide maintenance and support services for data centers in Malaysia. NASDAQ-listed CCH Holdings, which is most known for operating Chicken Clay Pot House and other restaurant franchises, announced on Tuesday that its wholly owned subsidiary had signed a 3-year sales and service agreement with several clients whose identities it did not reveal due to non-disclosure agreements. The deal marks the group's entry into the fast-growing technology infrastructure sector as part of its broader diversification strategy. Under the deal, CCH will also provide technical and operational support services, including compute capacity allocation, deployment coordination, technical consultation, and operational advisory services for data center facilities, according to a statement on the company's website. And you know, guys, this actually makes a lot of sense here. There's a lot of synergies. These businesses are virtually identical. For example, one involves managing the power demands, the cooling, the maintenance requirements for high-performance compute clusters, and the other one cooks chicken. I mean, they're practically cousins. All right, now, all kidding aside, why am I zeroing in on this? Because the data center market in Malaysia is mostly bullshit. Remember all these stories about Supermicro and the server smuggling into China? Well, what they didn't say, what Supermicro has been doing, has been using hair dryers to peel the labels off of their NVIDIA GPUs and their server racks. And then they put those labels onto dummy racks that they ship to Malaysia. The good racks go through Malaysia and end up in Chinese data centers. What they do with the dummy racks is they install them in dummy data centers in Malaysia that doesn't really do anything. But if the auditors or the police ever come check, you can point to a shelf and say, yup, there's the rack. You see the NVIDIA label on the GPU. And so I guess it doesn't really matter if you have a freaking chicken cook managing your data center, because it's not real GPUs in that data center. The real shit has already been forwarded to the Chinese in violation of U.S. export controls, something that founders and directors are being indicted at Supermicro for doing. And now the chicken guy is running data centers. There has got to be a Los Pollos Hermanos meme in here somewhere with Gus Fring running a data center. I don't know. Somebody make it. Make that happen. Make it show number one. All right. And last but not least, guys, I just want to mention today at 9 p.m. Eastern time, I will be on Macro Edge Radio with my friends over at Macro Edge talking about AI woes, Asia, and hyperscalers. That at 9 p.m. Eastern time. It's going to be a long day, but I can't wait. I always have a good time talking to these guys. But until then, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with us, Melon Heads, this morning. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button. I'll see you guys again on Monday. Also, today is Friday. That means at 2 p.m. Eastern time is our weekly get-together on Zoom for a Q&A. Thank you very much to my Patreon, YouTube members, and Buy Me a Coffee members for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.